And I want to ask the rest of you, if you would, to turn to Luke chapter 23. Luke chapter 23. And today, we're going to talk about a missed opportunity. All right? One opportunity, two responses, the same outcome. And today, we're looking at the life of Pilate and Herod. But I want to start with telling you a true story. All right? About a fellow that missed just an incredible, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. A friend took him for a ride one day, way out in the sticks. This is a true story. This fellow took him for a ride for miles and miles. I mean, they went for miles and miles on the main highway, and then they turned off on dirt roads, and they went for even more, miles and miles and miles, until they were finally in the midst of a vast expanse of uninhabited countryside. I mean, there were a few old shacks around here or there. There were some horses grazing here or there, but it was just nothing. The friend, Walter, stopped the car. He got out, and he started to describe his great vision for what was going to be. I mean, it was like in color, you know, the vividness that he's describing what he's going to do at this place. The wonderful things he's going to build. And he wanted his friend, Arthur, to get in on it. Now, Walter had put together enough money to pull off what he wanted to do. But he wanted his friend Arthur to buy all the surrounding property because he knew that one day it would be worth millions. But Arthur thought to himself, who in the world is going to drive 25 miles out in the middle of nothing and nowhere for this crazy project? The logistics of this venture are just way too much. And so Walter explained to his friend Arthur, I can handle the main project. You've just got to buy all this surrounding land. One day, not very far from today, this place will be filled with hotels, with restaurants. People are going to flock here like crazy to spend weeks at a time on vacation. And if you buy the land now, you'll make a killing. What could I say? Arthur tells this story later on in life. He said, what could I say? I knew he was wrong. I knew that he had let his dream get the best of his common sense. So I mumbled something about money being tight, and I promised I would look into the whole thing a little bit later on. Later on will be too late, Walter told me. He cautioned Arthur as they walked back to the car, you better move on this right now, because before long, this land will go up hundreds of times in value. And so Art Linkletter turned down the opportunity to buy up all the land surrounding what would become Disneyland. His friend Walt Disney tried to talk him into it, but he thought the idea was crazy. Now, isn't that amazing? Honest truth, a missed opportunity. One shot, one chance, and the opportunity was gone. And he missed it. Well, today, we're going to look at a couple of guys that missed their opportunity. They had one opportunity. One opportunity to know Jesus. And they missed it. And Jesus is worth more than any piece of property. He's worth more than any millions in wealth. He's worth more than anything else. And both of these missed their one opportunity. You know, a lot of times we assume we have all the time in the world. Well, a lot of times we assume We have, future options. But in reality, we don't know when and if there'll ever be another opportunity. We really don't know that. We are so arrogant in assuming there will always be another chance. But I'm telling you, these two only had one opportunity and they missed it. All right, so look in Luke chapter 23, and I'm just going to read the first 12 verses, the story of Jesus' interaction with these two men, and we're going to look at their responses to him. And they came up with the same outcome. Then the whole body of them, so if you remember, Jesus was before the religious leaders, the Sanhedrin. And they, the high priest, chief priest, he was before all of that ruling group of the religious group of Israel. And they wanted to kill him. They found him guilty of blasphemy, and they wanted to kill him. And so, it says, the whole body of them arose and brought him before Pilate because they couldn't kill him on their own. They couldn't just rise up and put him to death because Israel was under the controlling hand of Rome. And they began to accuse him. We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar. See, they were twisting their argument because they didn't care about Caesar. They didn't care about giving Caesar money. They didn't want to give Caesar any money. But they just wanted to see Jesus dead. And he's saying that he himself is Christ, a king. He's raising himself up on the same level, the same place and position as Caesar himself. And Pilate asked him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered him and said, "It is as you say." And Pilate said to the chief priests and the multitudes, I find no guilt in this man. But they kept on insisting, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place." When Pilate heard it, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was in Jerusalem at that time. And so Jesus is brought to Pilate, and Pilate basically passes him along to Herod. All right? In verse 8, now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by it. And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. And Herod with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day, for before they had been at enmity with one another. It's a great story. It's a great insight into the lives of two men and what they do with Jesus. And it's also very instructive for us. And I have to be honest with you, it's hard. So much of what we've been looking at is hard. It's not going to get any better because of what we see taking place through Jesus. But as we look at the lives of those surrounding Jesus, we just see fallenness. We see desperate situations. And we see how people respond at their point of need. And I just want to remind you, this was really, in essence, the only opportunity that these two had to know Jesus. And so let's look at their responses. All right? For Pilate, He was the Jesus that he didn't need. I mean, he didn't need this right now. You know, Pilate's job was pretty pressure-filled. He was the emissary from Rome. And so he had those above him in authority in Rome watching and seeing how he was doing. And so he felt that pressure. And he was a bureaucrat. And so he obviously didn't want to offend anybody, didn't want to make any wrinkles or cause any waves. And so he just wanted things to be calm and smooth and uninterrupted. He wanted to put in his time, be successful, and hopefully move on to something better. And so he didn't need this at this point in time. He didn't need the aggravation. He didn't need the problem. He didn't need the turmoil. He didn't need it. This was the Jesus that he didn't need. Now, here's the problem with Jesus. If you're one of those who just wants to move through life uninterrupted, here's the problem with Jesus. If you want to move through life with everything under control and smooth and no bumps in the road, here's the problem with Jesus. He is inconvenient. He is absolutely inconvenient. He will interrupt your goings-on. Just like he did Pilate's. Jesus is just that way, I'm telling you. He comes at the wrong time. He asks the wrong things. That's who Jesus is. And for Pilate, you just got to see Pilate in his position. Jesus was an inconvenience he didn't want to have to deal with. Have you ever been, even as a believer, rolling along and everything's just fine and God all of a sudden breaks into your life and calls you to do something that just wasn't in your plans? It just wasn't the right time. You just don't have quite enough information. It's just asking a little too much. It's just inconvenient for me right now. Have you ever found Jesus to be inconvenient? Pilate did. But Jesus was also polarized. You know, Jesus, when he shows up, he divides. I heard someone say, if Jesus is at work in your life or in your church and people aren't getting offended, he's not really there. Because that's just what he does. Jesus is a direct offense to our flesh. He is a direct offense to our comfort. He is a direct offense to our complacency. He is an irritation. He is polarizing. And here's Pilate dealing with this mess. And he didn't want to. You know, there were people who were stirring up strife. And have you ever been put in that position? The last thing you wanted to deal with. Because he was threatening Pilate's position. He was threatening his stability. He was threatening his comfort. That's who Jesus is. If you and I believe in a Christianity that we can skate along into blissful oblivion, that's just not right. It's not true. We are constantly called as believers to experience change and transformation. We are constantly being pulled and pushed and pressured out of our comfort into transformation. And that's never easy. And guess what? It began on the day of your salvation if you're genuinely born again. How many of you found it challenging at that point of your salvation to respond in faith to that which you knew nothing about? To step into the great abyss of not knowing what was coming. I mean, that's what faith is. Faith is the ability to step into the control of God. And that's hard. It's frightening. Well, that was Pilate's problem with Jesus. And so Jesus became the Jesus that he wanted to dismiss. He became the Jesus that I can dismiss. How many of you have ever dismissed Jesus because his requirement was too hard? You know, I'll never forget. I pastored in Pittsburgh, Kansas, and God was moving there. I've shared this with you before at different times, but I'm telling you, it just stands out. It's so glaring that God was moving. And at one point in time, one year, we actually baptized 47 people. I mean, these were people who were unchurched, who God was bringing to our church, who were getting saved. And it was like a revival. It was incredible. It was exciting, but it was messy because these people had never been in church. And I mean, there was stuff happening and stuff we were having to deal with, but it was incredible. God was truly moving in this church and in this situation. It was awesome. And I'll never forget a deacon's meeting. You know, we had monthly deacon's meeting, and one of our deacons, I said, Warren, why don't you dismiss us in prayer? And Warren prayed this prayer out of the blue, and I mean, my socks literally blew off my feet. It just blew my socks off, just literally. I mean, they just exploded right off my legs. Not really, but it was like that. Warren prayed this prayer. He said, Jesus, I want to ask you to leave us alone. I mean, I'm bowed, we're dismissing, and I look up. And I'm looking at Warren, and he's sincere. Jesus, I just want to ask you to leave us alone. He said, because every time you start to do something, the devil just comes and beats us up. Well, you know what? That kind of been the story in that church. That church had experienced a lot over the years. And it seemed like every time something started to happen, the devil would come along, as he always does, and stir the pot and stir things up, and the people would just kind of step back and say, no thanks. It's too hard. And they would dismiss. And I'm telling you, he prayed that prayer. And it shocked me. And it's one of those times that after he finished praying, I prayed and said, Jesus, don't leave us alone. We need you. I mean, but it blew my mind how easily you and I can become dismissive of Jesus, to just pass him along or pass on him because what he brings we don't want to deal with. Have you ever been there? Well, there are a lot of people. At their opportunity to know Jesus, to walk with Jesus, to experience Jesus, choose instead to pass on Jesus because of what he asked. Because it's too much. Because it would create too much chaos. It would stir up too much in my life. I don't have enough time. I don't know if I want to do that. That was Pilate's response to Jesus. To just pass him along and dismiss him. For Herod, instead of being the Jesus he didn't need, he was the Jesus he didn't want. Herod was excited to finally meet Jesus. I mean, he had heard stories. He had heard stories of what Jesus could do. And I mean, he was just excited. He was thrilled. Jesus is coming. They're bringing Jesus here. Oh, and he was stoked because he wanted to see a sign. He wanted to see Jesus do one of his tricks. But it ended up that Jesus wasn't the Jesus he wanted. What he found was that Jesus was boring. I mean, Jesus just stood there. He was boring. He didn't do everything for him that he thought he was going to do. And so he grew bored. He grew tired of Jesus. Jesus, we're waiting. Jesus, I brought you here. You're here so I could see you perform, so you could do something special for me. But he didn't. In fact, Jesus just stood silent. You know, now you got to know Herod. Herod was an evil man. He was a perverse man. He was living in incest with his daughter. He was intensely wicked and perverted at every turn. I mean, it was the way he was. It was the way his father was. He was filled with wickedness. He had John the Baptist, the forerunner of Jesus, beheaded. And so as Jesus stands before Herod, he has nothing to say. And in his saying nothing, he spoke volumes. He was disapproving. And that's the last thing Herod wanted from Jesus, was his disapproval. He expected Jesus to cater to his needs, to his whims, to his wants, to his desires. But instead, Jesus confronted his sin. And his silence was deafening. You see, Jesus threatened his perversion. Jesus spoke to the very heart of his sin without ever saying a word. Now, what's amazing is, Jesus was reviled by Herod, hated. I mean, this one that had been so eager and so excited because of what he was going to see happen and what Jesus was going to do for him, all of a sudden it turned to anger and hatred and revile and ridicule. And Jesus had never said a thing. It was just who he was and what he represented. You see, a lot of times when Jesus comes into our life, we hear about him, we get excited about what he's going to do for us. You know, we can just see all the stuff lining up he's going to do for us. But he shows up, and what we're confronted with is our own sin. And we don't like that. That's revolting to us. And so what did Herod do? He began to ridicule. Jesus became the Jesus he could ridicule. Well, you're no fun. You know? You're not going to entertain us. We'll entertain ourselves with you. And isn't it amazing that we live in a world that ridicules Jesus, that ridicules the followers of Jesus, that ridicules everything that Jesus represents? We live in a world that so reviles the holiness and righteousness of God that it has become a joke. But that's easier than dealing with the truth. And so he sent him back to Pilate. Now, here's an amazing thing. They both had an opportunity. They were face to face with the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. They were face to face with the one who could make their life new, who could make their life right. They were face to face with the only hope in all the world. their response was to pass on him and to ridicule him because they didn't want to deal with him. And the outcome was the same. Even though their response was different, the outcome was the same. And it's interesting what it says. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day. You know, that doesn't mean they started hanging out, because they hated each other. They didn't start hanging out. They didn't start hunting together. You know, they didn't become Facebook friends. They didn't start texting each other or messing each other or Snapchatting each other. It wasn't like that. They didn't become friends like that. But they were counted as one in their opposition to Jesus. Their response to him was different, but it brought the same outcome. They rejected Jesus Christ. And that made them friends together because they opposed Jesus. You see, Jesus is like that. You're either with him or you're against him. You're either for him or you're opposed to him. And so they became friends. And in doing so, they became the enemies of God. Look over in James chapter 4. In James chapter 4, in verse 4, it says, "You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." That was their friendship. They had become enemies of God. In their opposition to Jesus, to who he was, to what he represented, to what he even in them wanted to do in their lives, they opposed it. They dismissed him. They ridiculed him. They rejected him and became enemies. And in that, they were brothers. They were friends. The question is, what do you do with your opportunity? Every one of us will have had an opportunity where Jesus comes to us, he calls to us, he woos us to himself. He makes himself known in such a way that is calling us out of where we've been, of who we are, to where he is, to who he is. And that can be a really uncomfortable thing. And to be honest, most people dismiss him. Most people will reject and ridicule him. And to them, even the thought of him will be reviled, because of what he represents in their life. The question is, what have you done with that opportunity? But it's not just about at that moment and space and time of salvation. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 3 does talk about that, talk about our salvation. In Hebrews chapter 2, verse 3, it says, "How shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation?" There's no escape. There's no other way. If we neglect, if we dismiss, if we reject, if we ridicule, if we revile the salvation of God through Jesus Christ, there is no escape. But it's not just about our salvation. It is also about our life with him. And how many times does Jesus approach us? Does he woo us? Does he call us to action, to obedience, to yield ourselves? And we do the same. We dismiss him. We ridicule the idea. We think, no way, I'm not doing that. We need to learn. We need to be cautious. In John chapter 6, turn over there. In John chapter 6, Jesus is teaching and preaching and making himself known to the multitude. And I mean literally multitudes, thousands and thousands are following him every day. Listening to him, watching him, hanging on every word and action. They are enamored with Jesus until he begins to call them personally to commitment. And in John chapter 6, in verse 66, it says, as the result of this, many of his disciples, those who were following, those who had attached themselves, those who have said, I belong to Jesus. As the result of this, many of his disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore. That's pretty frightening. To think even in our life with him, that we could say, Jesus, I don't want to do that anymore. Jesus, this is too hard. What you're asking of me is too much. He gives the opportunity for obedience. He gives the opportunity for surrender. He gives the opportunity to yield ourselves. And we say, it's just, you're asking too much. And we stop walking with him. That's a frightening thing. That's something we need to take seriously. How many times have you sat in this church under my preaching or somebody else's preaching and you've heard the word and somehow in his goodness and grace, God has spoken to your heart and called you to action and you dismissed it? You said, I'll pass on this one. Listen, that's fright. You ever heard of grieving or quenching the Spirit of God? Jesus turned to the 12 and he said, do you want to go also? Are you going to leave me also? And I think they had the right understanding. Peter said, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. You're the only hope. You're all I've got. Sometimes we forget. Sometimes we forget that he's all we've got. We think we've got lots of other options, and so I'll defer and instead do this. And we forget who he is. This morning, I want to challenge you not to miss your opportunity. This morning, if God is convicting you of a particular sin in your life, an area of disobedience, maybe something that he desires you to do, but you've been unwilling to do. This morning, I'm going to plead with you. Don't put him off, because he may stop calling. It may go quiet. And how frightening would that be? this morning. Is it possible to go to church and be lost? Is it possible maybe to spend a lifetime in church and be lost? Is that a yes or a no? It is. I mean, look, coming into a church doesn't make you a Christian any more than putting a wheelbarrow in a barn or in a garage makes it a car, right? All right, so it's possible. And so honestly, it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. If you're sitting here this morning and God is convicting you, speaking to you, calling you out, calling you to himself, saying, yield to me as Savior and Lord. It doesn't matter how much time you've ever put in. Doesn't matter how much church you've attended or how many Sunday school classes you've done. None of that matters. What matters is that God has called and he's convicted. And it's your opportunity. And you aren't guaranteed of another. We need to respond. Pilate and Herod missed it for their own reasons, but the outcome was the same. That's a hard word, but I'm telling you, we need to be warned. We need to be responsive when God calls, when the opportunity is there.